So it's logical that the one on the right is the one that gives you the good advice, as the pasuk says, "Lev chacham liyimino." The heart of the wise person is on his right. The lev ksil lismoyle, and the why and the heart of the fool is on his left. So in other words, Marashal says we're not necessarily talking. The pasuk is not necessarily talking about the heart itself, but rather the cloyus, the kidneys, which are the advisors of the heart. And then he says, that's also when we, now what, how does this fit in? So one way it fits into the Gemara again. We said before, we brought the pasuk by Yitzer, and we were talking about the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara, so therefore it becomes appropriate to talk about this here. But the other point is, it helps a person realize, when we say in the Mishnah, b'chol levavcha, b'shnei yitzarecha, what does it mean? It means the two yitzarim, which advise your heart, your mind, what to do and what not to do. So the Gemara continues on this topic. Tanan Rabban, and Lev Mevin, the heart understands what a person should do. Cloyus Yoytzes, kidneys, as we said, give advice how to do it. In Sifrei Kabbalah, for example, it's often the kidneys are compared to Netzach and Horid. I think the Alter Rebbe mentions that in Igeres Kesavov, where he goes through the Sfiris and what they mean in Avoda and what they mean in the person in a person's emotional and ruchniyistik makeup. So he mentions over there that the kidneys are that Netzach and Horid can be related to the kidneys, in the sense you have a person has already decided, he's already gone through Chesed, Gvura, and Tiferes. So now he knows he's going to be mashpia to the other, but how exactly to divide up that hashpa and give it in the appropriate way, that's the job of Netzach and Hoid, similar to what we're saying over here, what the kidneys accomplish. Then the windpipe gives out the voice. When a person is actually ready to speak, then the sound comes out through his windpipe. Vesh machnes kol mine meichel, the esophagus brings in all kinds of food into the body. The lung absorbs all kinds of liquids. Now that one's a little difficult to understand. I mean, you use your lungs for breathing. What's this business with liquids? And it actually comes up in halacha when there are sirchus in the lung. There's a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. What is the cause of sirchus, and why is it that they can make an animal treif? Rashi holds, based on our Gemara over here, that the lung absorbs liquids, and therefore when you see a sircha, it means some of that liquid leaked out and formed a thing hanging off the lung, and therefore, so it means there's a hole over there. Tosfos, meanwhile, takes the opposite view, that it's not that it's something that leaked out of the lung, but on the contrary, it means that the lung is now stuck to something else, some other internal part of the body, where now eventually that sircha is going to rip away and rip away part of the lung with it. In any case, One possibility, the Gemara may simply mean, a person can breathe very dry air, but it's kind of hard on a person. Usually the air should have some moisture in it. So that may be what the Gemara means over here, that the lung brings in not only oxygen, but also liquid, and that helps a person breathe easier. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Loshen mechatech, the tongue splits up the sounds of a language. So you have, like, the way the Zohar describes it, it's brought in many places in Exodus, that you have a person's voice starts out as koil poshet hayotzim and alev. You have one undifferentiated sound that comes from the heart, that comes through the windpipe that we said, and then you need the various organs of speech to divide it into the phonetic sounds that we're familiar with. So the tongue does that. Pegoimer, and the mouth completes the speaking of the word, so you actually express it out. That's malchus. Kobid koyus, the liver makes a person angry. Now what does that mean? I once saw an explanation that the liver has a lot of jobs in the body. Among its jobs is it produces enzymes that break down fats in the body. So breaking them down, it's almost like it's angry at them and rips them up into shreds, which ultimately the body uses for its needs. Moras the rectus foetipa, then the gallbladder sprinkles in a drop of gall, a drop of bile into the liver, umanichato, and makes it calm down. So in keeping with that explanation, the explanation is one of the liver produces bile, which is used for that purpose to break up fats. Now what happens is, the liver and the gallbladder have between them, as many other different parts of the body do, they have a feedback mechanism. They just put it in that if the liver is overproducing bile, then the extra of it is stored in the gallbladder, and then If there's too much of it, then there's a message, a signal sent over the nerves or whatever it is to tell the liver to stop producing it. So in that sense, like the gallbladder makes calms down the liver and tells it, calm down, stop producing so much bile. Next, toil seichik, the spleen makes a person happy. Rashi explains seichik, meloshin seichik, happy. So the spleen makes a person happy. So what would that mean? One possibility is that the job of the spleen in the body is to break down old red blood cells and reuse them. If a person doesn't have that, they get very anemic and very weak. So then when it's functioning correctly, then that makes it possible for a person to be strong and happy. There is, though, a different explanation that some Achronim have, that instead of soichik with a sin, it's supposed to be shoichik with a shin, in which case it means grinds up. So maybe in the same sense, because it grinds up the old red blood cells and recycles them. Anyway, kurkavan toichin, the stomach grinds up the food. Kaver Yeshena, the kurkuvan and the kaver really are two different parts of the stomach. Rashi describes that the kurkuvan is really an organ in a bird. In a bird, the stomach, it's called a gizzard, in a bird is equivalent kind of to the stomach in mammals and people. The kaver would be the actual stomach that contains digestive juices. Yeshena, that makes a person sleepy. Afneir, and the nose makes a person awake, and it wakes a person up. And the Braisa finishes off. Nina ha-yoshin v'yoshin aneir. If what happens is that things get switched around, the thing that should put a person to sleep, such as the stomach, now makes him awake. For example, he has indigestion. V'yoshin aneir, or vice versa, that what should usually wake him up, the nose, instead causes him to fall asleep. Then he starts withering away and going. In other words, he starts getting very sick because things are not working the way they're supposed to. Rashi gives another explanation that near hayoshin would mean if you have the stomach is still doing its job and making the person sleepy. The person has had a big meal, his stomach is full, and now he feels sleepy. But now if his nose is also making him sleepy, so now he's got two organs together helping to make him sleepy, or he's got two organs together working to make him awake, then he's got problems. And the Braisa finishes off, Tana, im shneim yeshenim, shneim ne'odim, if both of them make a person sleepy or both of them make a person awake, miyad mes, then right away he's going to die. So again, according to Rashi's second explanation, that's the same thing as it was saying before. It's just putting it in different words. According to Rashi's first explanation, it's telling us another detail that we didn't know before, not only if they get switched, but also if they both end up doing the same thing. This can also go together with, another reason. So one reason why the Gemara is bringing this in over here is, again, because we mentioned the Kloyus Yoetzus, so therefore the Gemara takes the time to mention the functions of a number of these organs as well. But also, I guess we might say that this might also be a continuation of what we had before about Asher Yotza is Adam B'Chochma, that a person realizes how much Chochma goes in to the functioning of the body and how everything meshes together and works together the way it's supposed to, then you feel very much more grateful to the Eibishten. You say Asher Yotza with a whole different feeling.
When things go wrong, then you really appreciate it.
When things go wrong, you really appreciate it afterwards. That is also true, yeah. So, continuing on the topic of the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara, the Gemara continues, Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Agluviemer, Tzadikim Yetzer HaTov Shoftan. The Tzadikim, the Yetzer Tov judges them. Shenema Libi Cholo V'Kirbi, as the Pasuk says, David HaMelech says on himself, my heart is empty within me, meaning Rashi says, Libi refers to my Yetzer Hara. So the Yetzer Hara is like dead within me in the sense that I'm able to control it. So therefore, only the Yetzer Tov is judging the person. Rashi understands judging in the sense of leading a person to do something or other. We do actually find in some places in the Pesukim, the word shofet is almost cognate with the word shevet, which means a stick, like what you use to lead a flock of sheep someplace. So in that sense, it actually may be saying that shofet over here literally means the Yetzer Tov leads him to do such and such versus the Yetzer Hara leads him to do such and such. Rishoyim Yetzer Hara shofet, John. Then the Yetzer Hara, the Rishoyim are judged, meaning according to Rashi, they're being led in a particular direction by the Yetzirah. Shenema, Ne'um Pesha L'Rosha B'Kerav L'Yiv Gomer. As the Pasuk says, so says Pesha, so the, David says, in my heart I know the following fact, B'Kerav Libi. In my heart I know the following fact, Ne'um Pesha, that the Pesha, which means the Yetzirah, says to the Rosh, L'Rosha, to the Rosha, he tells him, Ein Pachad Elokim L'Neged Einav, don't have fear of Hashem before your eyes. So therefore, so we see that the Rosha is being led in that direction by the Yetzirah that convinces him not to be afraid of Hashem. Then the Beinanim are judged, meaning they're led by both. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Ki Yamid Limin Evyan, as the Pasuk says, Hashem stands by the right side of the poor person, Lohishia Mishoftei Nafshoi, to save him from the judges of his soul. So judges in the plural implies that we're talking about a kind of person who has two kinds of judges. Now, that's all according to Rashi. Marsha points out the word shofet doesn't really mean, first of all, the word shofet doesn't, is not really mashma, that it means somebody who leads a person to do such and such. And second of all, do you need a proof that a tzaddik is led by his yetzatoiv and a rosha is led by his yetzahari? You need psukim to prove that. So rather, he says shofetan literally means to judge them. In the sense, in other words, so what happens? A tzaddik, if a tzaddik does wrong, so since libi cholav b'kirbi, since his Yetzahara is dead within him, but we're understanding Cholal in the other way as well. He's saying that David is saying, there can be a time when I acted wrongly, Cholal, Meloshin Chilul, I profaned, I desecrated something within me. However, it's the Yetzah Tov that judges him and says, you did wrong, you better fix that up. As opposed to with a Rosha, what happens is the Yetzirah is what judges them and declares that they are guilty and deserve punishment. The Pesha LaRosha, the Pesha says regarding the Rosha that he is a Rosha and he deserves punishment because, and that was, so the Kerev Libi, the Yetzirah that's within the Rosha's heart tells him that he deserves punishment. And then with the Beinanim, meaning that really you have both of them arguing that he should be punished, the Yetzer Tov, because of the mitzvahs he failed to do, and the Yetzer Hara, because of the Averis he did do. But Hashem helps him out, Lo Shia Mishoitzer Nafshoi, and Hashem helps out the Beinani, and his Makta Klape Chesed, and inclines the scale towards Chesed. That's Marsha. We know at the beginning of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe brings the first page of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe brings this Gemara, and after he goes about proving that a Beinani is not what we usually think of as a Beinani, somebody who's half mitzvahs, half averus, rather it means somebody who keeps his Yetzirah in check. Then in Perek Yud Gimel, he explains our Gemara. Tzadikim Yetzer Tov Shoftan, in the sense that the Tzadikim are exclusively ruled by the Yetzer Tov. They have no Yetzirah to more like Rashi, in other words, that the Yetzer Tov exclusively is telling them what to do. The Beinani, the Rosha is the other way around, it's the Yetzirah that's exclusively telling them what to do. And of course, as the Alter Rebbe points out, doesn't mean necessarily Tzadik and Rosha all the time. You can have a person who one time is a Rosha and another time is not. And then the same thing when it comes to the Beinani, Zev Zeh Shoftan, each one of them is giving his opinion, and when we say that Hashem helps, Lo Shem Shoftei Nafshei, means that Hashem gives the Yetzirah, the Nefesh HaLekis, a greater ability to influence the Nefesh, to influence the Beinani, so that he's able to keep his Nefesh HaBahamas in check, which otherwise, without the Eibishter's help, he wouldn't be able to. So the Gemara continues, Omer Rabba, Kegoin Onu Beinim. For example, we are Beinim. Now we know on the first page of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe quotes it differently. First of all, the Alter Rebbe quotes Rabba, and a number of the Mefarshim say over here, that must be the correct Girsa, because the Gemara is going to go on to say that Abaya calls him Mar, which means Rebbe. And if it was Rabba, who was Abaya's Chaver, he wouldn't call him that. So it has to be Rabba is correct, not Rabba as it's printed in the Gemaras. But the Gersa that we have in front of us, going onu beinanim, whereas the Alter Rebbe is going on no beinani, the point may be, the Alter Rebbe wants to stress the point over there as he goes on to say that Rabba particularly, we know from other Gemaras, loy posik pumim Gersa, he never stopped learning for even a moment, as you have the whole story in Bava Metzia. Therefore, he, more than anybody else, when he's saying going on no beinani, he may, as the Gemara is going to go on to imply, he may be thinking that he's a Beinani when really, in fact, that he's a Tzaddik. And then, therefore, the Alter Rebbe quotes it that way. In other words, if he quoted Kegoin Onu Beinanim, fine, you know, Rabba was like that. We don't know that all the other people he's talking about are of that caliber either. Anyway, Omalei Abaya, Le Shavit Mar, Chaya L'Choberia, so Abaya says, you're a Rebbe, you're not leaving life for any creature, meaning if you're a Benini, then who could possibly be a Tzaddik? And you have the famous explanation also that since, as the Alter Rebbe goes on to explain in Perek Beis, everybody gets their chayus through the tzaddik, then Abaya is telling Rabbah, if you consider yourself a Benini and you're the tzaddik Adur, then that means you're not making it possible for anybody to get their chayus through the tzaddik, because who are you going to say is the tzaddik then? So the Gemara continues, V'omar Rabba or Rava, Yoda inish benafshe itzadik hoi roshavu. A person will know in his mind whether he is a tzadik in his heart and in his soul, whether he's a tzadik or a rosha. Which means, in other words, so Rashi says a couple of explanations. One is that it means if a person sees that the Yetzirah never has any control of him, then the fact is, we said before, the Yetzirah does have a function. A person does need the Yetzirah to a certain extent, and a person does need a Nefesh of Bahamas to a certain extent in order to be able to do period of Arivia and other such things. So therefore, so he should know that if he's a tzaddik, he should know that he needs to still get his Yetzirah to, in harness, to be able to do the appropriate things that it needs, that he needs for it. Vice versa, if he knows that he's a Rasha, then he needs to be careful to push away the Yetzirah as much as possible, because already he's too far over in that direction. Then Rashi's second explanation is, if a person sees that, yes, the Yetzirah has control of him, but he sees, as the Gemara mentions elsewhere, that if a person sees that the Yetzirah is getting the better of him, he should schlep the Yetzirah to the Beis Medrash, and even if the Yetzirah is like a stone, then he'll explode, and even if he's like strong iron, he'll shatter. So if he sees that that happens, then he can recognize that he's a tzaddik gomer. If he sees that his Yetzirah is not getting shattered and broken even by schlepping into the Beis Medrash, then he knows there's a problem, then he knows he's a rosh gomer, and he better work on it. Marsha says another point also one of the other Mephoshim says over here that this is a continuation of Rabba saying to Abaya, you're saying, Lo Shavik Mar Chaya L'Choberia. Rabba is saying, yeah, but a person knows good and well for himself whether he's a tzaddik or not. And if I'm telling you that I'm not going on Urbanini, then that's how it must be. Now, as the Alter Rebbe points out in Tanya, it may actually be that that was in fact not the case, but because he was mispalo kolayim kuli, because he's davening and learning all day long, therefore he thinks that he's a Benini, when in truth he is in fact a tzaddik. Continues the Gemara. Va'omer Rabba or Rava loy ivroi alma elo tzaddikim gmurim alor rishoyim gmurim. The world was created only for the tzaddikim gmurim and for the rishoyim gmurim. Meaning, so this world was created for the rishoyim gmurim. They get their full schar in this world, and therefore, so the world, all the good things that there are in this world were created that ultimately such people will have the best of that. And then olam haba was created for the tzaddik gemurim. It is actually Marsha that says that. He says that he's answering Abaya. You're telling me, Lashavik Marchaya, I know that I'm only from the Benin. But Marsha says that actually it was Mitzad Anivus that he didn't want to say that. According to the Alter Rebbe and Tanya, it's not Anivus. He genuinely thought he was a Benin because he's Mispalot Kolayim Kolayim. Okay, so now Rabba is saying that the world was created only for the tzaddikim gemurim and the rishonim gemurim. V'omer Rabba or Rava loy nivra olam ela b'shvil Achav ben Omri v'Rav Chanina ben Dosa. The world was created only for the sake of Achav ben Omri, the king of Israel, who was fabulously rich. And the Gemara, in fact, mentions in Megillah that he was one of the few kings who ruled over the entire known world, or at least had an influence over the entire known world. So he got his full schar in Olam Hazeh more than any other Rasha. Rav Chanina ben Dosa, who was extremely poor and therefore had next to nothing in Olam Hazeh, and gets his full schar in Olam Hazeh. So Achav Olam Hazeh, Rav Chanina ben Dosa Olam Hazeh. Eitz Yosef, in fact, points out that there's a, like, the Psukim mentioned that Achav had 70 sons in Shomron, which was the capital city. A Medrash says he also had 70 sons in Yisrael, which was like the second, they had like the, Schoenbrunn is in the mountains, so it was a nice place to be during the summer, but we wouldn't necessarily want to be there in the winter. It would be too cold. So therefore, there was a second palace in Yisrael, which is in a valley in the north of Eretz Yisrael, which on the contrary was a nice place to be in the winter. So the Pasuk mentions that Ahav had 70 sons in Schoenbrunn. The Medrash adds that he had another 70 in Yisrael, and each of them had a winter palace and a summer palace. Ahav himself, the Pasuk mentioned, by the way, mentions that he had a palace with ivory carvings all over it. They actually found them in archaeological digs in Schoenbrunn. They found bits and pieces of those ivory tablets. Anyway, so he was fabulously rich. So that's what we're saying. So he's the exemplar of the person who had the ultimate of Olam Hazeh. Meanwhile, Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, who lived off, as the Gemara says in Tainus, who lived off a calf of carobs from one Erev Shabbos to the next, a calf a week of carobs. So he's the ultimate poor person, where he's the ultimate tzaddik who was poor, who gets his full schar in Olam Haba. The Mishnah had said, you have to love Hashem with all b'chol levav, b'chol nafshach, b'chol ma'adecha. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer had gadol, Rabbi Eliezer had gadol, which is the regular Rabbi Eliezer in Shas, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, says, you have to ask, im nema b'chol nafshach, lama nema b'chol ma'adecha. Now we said in the Mishnah, b'chol nafshach means with all your soul, and b'chol ma'adecha, one meaning, we said b'chol ma'adecha means b'chol ma'amoncha, with all your money. So you have to ask, why does it have to say both? If it says b'chol nafshecha, doesn't that automatically include all your money? V'im nema b'chol ma'odecha, lama nema b'chol nafshecha, and vice versa. So the loy malach, it comes to tell you, im yesh lecha adam shegufa yichaviv adam mimamonei, you might have a person where his guf is more important to him than his money. L'chach nema b'chol nafshecha. Addressing such a person, the Torah says you have to love Hashem with your entire nefesh, with your entire soul, meaning your entire physical life. Meaning, so Marashah says that actually, that Rabbi Eliezer, now the Gemara is going to mention in the next line, Rabbi Akiva talks about the idea that from here we learn the concept of Mesiras Nefesh, that a person has to be Moser Nefesh and not be over on certain Averis. That Marashah says Rabbi Eliezer agrees with that. He's not disagreeing with that. In fact, he says Rabbi Akiva is coming to explain what Rabbi Eliezer is saying. With that said, there are other Mephoroshim who understand that no, Rabbi Eliezer is just saying that it means, in other words, that a person has to love Hashem with all his soul in the sense that it has to be something all-encompassing. Rabbi Eliezer would not necessarily say that a person has to be, that from here we learn, a person has to be Moser Nefesh from Mitzvahs, comes Rabbi Akiva and says that's what it means. And the Yesh Lecha Adam Shema Moni Chavu Vala Megufay, vice versa, you might have a person whose money is more important to him than his guf. L'chach Nema B'chol Ma'adecha. So even, okay, you could say a Meshuganer, a person considers his money more important than his body, but fine, the Torah has to address Meshugoyim like that also, and tell them, even don't think you can get away with it, nevertheless, B'chol Ma'adecha, you still have to be willing to give away all your money for the aged. With that said, though, not all the Mephoshim say we're talking about a Meshuggah like that. One, among other things, one explanation is you could be talking about the Gemara elsewhere mentions, for example, that we'll talk about it later on. We'll talk about it soon in connection with the story of Rabbi Akiva and his Mesiras Nefesh. The Gemara elsewhere mentions that being tortured is worse than being killed. The Gemara says, for example, Hanani Mishal Bazariah, they were ready to go on Mesiras Nefesh and not bow to Nebuchadnezzar's statue because he was just going to throw them into a fiery furnace and that would have been the end of it. But if he had threatened to whip them, the Gemara says they would have bowed to it. So this business about b'chol nafshecha and b'chol ma'adecha might mean, for example, you have a person, fine, he says, you're willing to kill me, fine, I'm willing to go with that. But if it goes to the point of torture, I don't know that I'm going to be able to withstand that. And if that kind of torture is, they're going to take away all my money, then I'm not necessarily going to be able to withstand that either. Because it's still going to be an ongoing thing. I'm still going to have to live with the consequences afterwards. And therefore, the Torah is telling him, even then, you still have to do it. So the Gemara continues, Rabbi Akiva, b'chol nafshecha, means afilu hu noitolos nafshecha. Rabbi Akiva says that b'chol nafshecha means even if Hashem is taking away your life, even if you have to be a person, it has to be killed, on the siddhas nefesh, then nevertheless, that's what you have to do. In fact, Marashah goes into a long discussion over here about that. In fact, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that learns exactly that. How do we know, Takta, that a person has to be Moser Nefesh not to worship Avodah Zarah? We know there are the big three, Avodah Zarah, Gilad Ais, and Shvichas Damim. Where do we know Avodah Zarah from? Takta, this possible. Then the Gemara goes on to say we have other psukim that teach us the same thing as far as Gilad Ais and Shvichas Damim. Marashah also points out, by the way, that In this story that we're going to be telling now, Rabbi Akiva was Moser Nefesh not for any of the above, but rather to teach Torah in public. The difference is that the Gemara also establishes there in Sanhedrin that Shas Hashmad is different. The time when the Goyim are trying to outlaw Yiddishkeit entirely and destroy Yiddishkeit entirely, then the Gemara says, then you have to be Moser Nefesh even for a minor mitzvah. The expression in the Gemara over there is even if the Goyim have one style of shoelaces and the Jews have a different style, to be Moser Nefesh not to wear the Goyish style. So therefore, in this case, when Rabbi Akiva was teaching Torah in public, as in the following story, it was a Shas Hashmad, and therefore he was justified in being Moser Nefesh for that. There is Bechlal also, there's an interesting machlokas between the Rambam and the Balei HaTosfos on the question, what about when a person is not required to be Moser Nefesh? What about, for example, so other than the big three, and other than Shas Hashmad, is a person allowed to decide that I will be Moser Nefesh for some other mitzvah? The Rambam says flat out not. The Rambam says a person does that, and he's Meschayev B'Nasro. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosfos say that a person could do that. And there's a lot of discussion, pro and con. For example, we have over here Rabbi Akiva being Moser Nefesh for teaching Torah. Okay, so they give the answer that Rambam would say that was a Shas Hashmad. That's different. Another example is they give the example, let's say, with Daniel. He was Moser Nefesh to Davin 3 times a day. That's not any of the above, and there wasn't a Shas Hashmad there necessarily. So they give an answer, according to the Rambam, Daniel did not necessarily know that he's putting himself at risk. He knew, he's davening. He didn't realize that they had mastered on him to the king, and that there's this law against davening, and so on and so forth. Or actually, the Malbim learns on the Psukim over there, that Daniel figured that his davening is actually not something that's covered by the law anyway. It's one thing. He understood the law to mean, if you have a new request, then fine, you have to make it of the king and not of whichever god you usually bow to. But like this, where I have this regular thing that I've been doing for years, davening 3 times a day, then he figured that's not included in the law. So in any case, the Rambam could answer along such lines. With that said, there is also an interesting idea that Rishonim bring, that maybe even the Rambam would agree, when you have a mitzvah that many people are being careless with, then a great chassid, a great tzaddik, is allowed to go and be Moser Nefesh for that mitzvah in order to uphold it by the Jewish people, even though it's not one of the big three and it's not Shas Hashmad, but in order that people don't get careless with that mitzvah. In any case, that'll be the story with Rabbi Akiva, which we'll tell that story tomorrow, Bez Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Geula, Rosh Chodesh Aleph Shvat, Rosh Chodesh. So today, Rosh Chodesh Shvat is the day when Moshe started Hoyol Moshe Be'eras HaTorah, when Moshe started explaining the Torah to the Jewish people, B'Shivim Lashon, in 70 Lashonos. So that ever talked about, this is relevant to every Jew's Avodah, because every Yid has within him a B'chinas Moshe Rabbein. That means on Rosh Chodesh Shvat, there's a special M'sinas Koyach, Hashem gives special energy to every person's Avodah to be able to spread Torah and Yiddishkeit in all the languages of the world in the Shivim Lashon. That means both when it comes to Jews who have to be taught in foreign languages because they don't know, they're not yet shy of the Lashon Kodesh, and Lahavdil, when it comes to being Mashpia on the 7 nations of the world to accept the Shem Mitzvah, we teach it to each one of them in their own languages. Halacha, continuing on Brachas Achronos. If you're eating seeds or pits of fruits, so then we said before, we learned in the previous halacha that whenever you have something which is toughle to the fruit, then it gets downgraded one bracha, like we said, for example, about orange peels and such things. So by the same token, the seeds get downgraded one bracha. So if they're sweet, then they're downgraded one bracha and you say hadam on them. Although the Alter Rebbe differs and says that in that case it would be hates. The Alter Rebbe would say the peels are different than the seeds. But if they're bitter, then they don't count as anything. If a person eats them as is, then you don't make a bracha at all. If, for example, if you roast them like the way they roast pumpkin seeds or sesame seeds or sunflower seeds or whatever, then you would say shakol on them because after all, they weren't originally meant to be edible because they're bitter. Then you have a related halacha. Now you have two types of almonds. You have the normal kind of almonds that you buy in the store nowadays are sweet ones. Then there's a different subspecies of them that are bitter. So the bitter ones, when they're young, so then you don't normally eat the almond itself. You eat the shell of it, which is where, and you plant it for that purpose. So therefore you'd say ha'etz on the shell and the pashtus, you wouldn't say anything, or maybe you'd only say ha'dama on the inside. when they get mature, then the main thing that is to eat is the bitter part. Then if you eat them as is, the bitter part, then yeah, you don't make a bracha at all. Again, if you roast them, then there's something else. They are, after all, a peri. They are, after all, a fruit. And you do plant the tree in order to grow almonds on it. Then you would say, I ate something. Those bitter almonds, by the way, if you ever do come across them in the store, be careful with them. Actually, they contain cyanide. That is actually why roasting them. That's actually why roasting them is important. Also, if you have candied almonds, even though the sugar or whatever they're coated with is the majority, you still say Bura Priya Eitz on them. But Pashtus, I guess the same thing would apply to like those Jordan almonds, the ones coated with that, with the smooth coating that you sometimes find by Simchas or whatever. But Pashtus, the same thing. The almond is the main thing. Therefore, you'd say Ha Eitz on them. Also, if you have sugar-coated cinnamon, then you say shahako, because cinnamon is not a pavy. It's only the bark of a tree.
Chocolate-covered
almonds and pashtas would be the same thing. Would be hadam, because the almond is the main thing. The pashtas, I guess the same thing would be true as far as other things. Chocolate-covered raisins and whatnot would be the same idea, yeah.